Okay, welcome everyone. Lovely to be here. So opening up on Psachim chapter 8. Haisha bizman shehi beveit ba'ala, shachat aleha ba'ala, b'shachat aleha aviha, tochal mishel ba'ala. So this is the question of, you have to be registered for a Pesach, for a maximum of one Pesach. So you can't be registered for two different sacrifices. And you're also sort of registered with whoever has control over you in that moment. This is the case of a married woman who would normally eat the Pesach with her husband, but happens and is in fact in her husband's house, right? So a wife when she is in her husband's house, but it turned out that her husband sacrificed a Pesach for her, and her father also sacrificed a Pesach for her. She should eat the husband's Pesach and not her father's, because that's the principle you see a lot in the Seder Nashim in the Mishnah, which is that the act of marriage is the transfer of the woman from her father's domain to her husband's domain. That also only applies to minor women. So minor women are in their father's domain. Majority age single women are actually of their own domain. They have their own agency totally. Married women then become under their husband's domain according to the Mishnaic framework. So this is the question of this person had two viable Pesachs that could have been sacrificed for them, right? They could have decided maybe I'll do it with my father this year, or they could have decided maybe I'll do it with my husband this year. Maybe they didn't decide either way, but turns out that they both sacrificed the Pesach for them. Which ones they eat? They eat the husband. The husband has sort of a stronger claim. She has a stronger bond with her husband than she does with her father while she's in her husband's house here. But halcha regel harishon la'asot beit aviha shachat aleha aviha v'shachat aleha ba'ala tochal bimkom shehi rotza. If she went for the first festival after getting married to be in her father's house, this apparently is a custom that where she would spend the first festival in her father's house, and then both her husband and her father sacrifice a Pesach for her, she can now choose whichever Pesach she wants to eat. She can go eat with her father, or she can go eat with her husband. They basically, in this case, I think because she was expected to be there, she'd made her intentions clear about where she was going to be. I'm going to be in my father's house for Pesach this year. Therefore, they have sort of equal weight. She gets to choose whichever Pesach she wants. They have equal authority over her. Opposed to the default situation where she's sort of hanging out in one of their houses, right? If you're a minor, then she would be with her father. And if she were a majority age married woman, she would be with her husband. I guess that's why we have two seders here. Yes, that's true. We have two. That is one of the best things about living in diaspora in most years, is the two seders means you get to like hit as many family members as possible. Best and worst things, but it definitely is useful. Okay. So we're just talking about like when a person has two potential Pesachs that they could go to, which ones they go to. And now we have a similar situation. Yatom sheshachatu alav apotropsin yochal bimkom shehu rotzeh. Now, an orphan who has a guardian, sort of legally appointed guardians, the apitropos, which is a Greek word, obviously. If they have a guardian, if they have multiple guardians, and each of the guardians, both guardian, each slaughtered a Pesach for them. They didn't coordinate which one of them was going to make the Pesach for the orphan. And by the way, orphan in the Mishnah means specifically doesn't have a father. The mother could be in the picture. It's not actually relevant to whether you're a Yatom or not. The point is you don't have a father. Then Yochal Bimkom Shirotzeh, the orphan gets to choose whichever guardian he wants to eat with. He gets to get the pick. It seems like each guardian has equal authority over him, so he can just choose, just similarly to the previous case with the wife in her father's house. Now another sort of similar, and normally based on this rule of like, you know, whoever sort of has authority over you, that's the group you would be with, then we would obviously assume that a slave of a person would eat the Pesach with their master. But that's not the only way one can be a slave. You could be a slave to multiple people at once, in which case the question would, which Pesach do you go with? That's what, Eved Shel Shnei Shutafin, Lo Yochal Mishel Shneihem. And a slave, which is the slave to two partners, two people have sort of an equal share in the slave's time. That person, this slave, can't eat either of them, either of the Pesachs. Neither of them have a full control over them. So it's not like they both have equal control and therefore the slave gets to choose. It's actually both of them have equal control and therefore the slave can't eat a Pesach at all. He's registered for two Pesachim and therefore is registered for none. Seems like basically the slave doesn't need as much consent than the orphan or the woman, right? The wife here gets to sort of choose, and the orphan gets the agency to choose. The slave is afforded less agency. If they have two partners, then legally they just can't eat either Pesachs. Could a slave who has only one master eat from his master's sacrifice? Yes, certainly. That's the default setting. The Mishnah often bypasses the default goes directly to the corner case, because the corner case also teaches you the default. So the fact that it comes to say an eved of two partners can't eat from either of them, that for sure means that an eved of only one person would obviously eat from that Pesach sacrifice. Okay, if the father made the Pesach with her in mind, but she doesn't eat it, does he have a problem with the acceptability of his sacrifice, given that his intention was wrong, like if he sacrificed for someone who had died? So if you remember from back when we learned that, as long as there's one person in the group which is still valid, then the sacrifice would still be valid. So as long as the entire group wasn't comprised of his daughter, I think that should end up being fine, or other people who ended up being invalid for the sacrifice. Okay. Another similar situation of a Eved here. And by the way, when you see Eved by default, like a slave by default, we're talking about a non-Jewish slave. In other words, a permanent slave and not a temporary slave, not a Jew who's under someone else's authority for 6 years and then goes free in the seventh. It's not always obvious, it's not always true that is the case, but in general, you should assume when you see the word Eved in the Mishnah that it means the Canaanite slave. Mishechetzio Eved v'chetzio ven chorin lo yochal mishel rabo. One who is half a slave and half free shouldn't eat his master's Pesachs. In other words, this is the same situation as above, except for the fact that one of the two masters, one of the two partners, has relinquished ownership over the slave and given his half of freedom. So now the slave has sort of half his time is he's free to do whatever he wants, and half his time he has to work for the other master, the master who didn't set him free. So can he eat from his master's sacrifice? The answer is no. Seems like he would actually have to bring his own sacrifice, because he's enough of a free person that he would have to eat of his own. He can't eat the master's. Mishnah 2. We've seen several times that the Pesach is understood to be either a lamb or a kid, a goat or a sheep. So you could be either, but you have to sort of have the right intention is important, as we've seen this whole way through. So now we're talking about a case of agency where somebody tells somebody else to slaughter the Pesach for them, but didn't tell them which kind of animal they were going to slaughter. So Ha'omer la'avdo, one who said to his slave, Sei ushkot alai et ha-Pesach, go and slaughter for me a Pesach. Shachat gedi yochal, shachat tale yochal, shachat gedi v'tle yochal min harishon. If he didn't specify, right, when he said go sacrifice your Pesach, he didn't specify whether it should be a goat or a sheep. So doesn't either way, if the slave went and slaughtered a kid, the master can eat that one. Or if he slaughtered a lamb, the master can eat that one. If the slave slaughtered both, just to sort of hedge their bets, then the master can eat the first one and not the second one. The second one is an invalid Pesach, would have to be burnt. So basically what we assume is that whatever the first one the slave sacrificed was by default the Pesach, and the second one was nothing. It was a bad sacrifice. Shachachma amar lo rabo, ketzad yaseh. What happens if the master did actually say, sacrifice me a lamb or a sheep, and then the slave sort of went off into the fields or whatever to slaughter and totally forgot which kind of animal the master asked them to slaughter. In that case, ketzad yaseh, what should he do? What should this slave do who forgot what his master asked him to do? What he should do is do sort of play a logical game. Yishchot tle v'ugdi v'yomar, im gedi amar li rabbi, gedi shelo b'tale sheli. Im tale amar li rabbi, Taleshalo Ugdishali. You can sort of play a game where you sacrifice both animals, and each one of them, you say, you sort of hedge your bets, and you make a declaration. If my master told me a kid, then the kid will be my master's, and the lamb will be mine. If my master told me about a lamb, then the lamb will be his, and the kid will be mine. So either way, you can slaughter both, and then it'll all work out. And you can go back to the master and say, oh, I've got... which one did you want? And the master will say, oh, I wanted that lamb. Great, perfect. You got the lamb, I got the sheep, everything's good. But what happens if then you go back to the master and the master himself forgot which animal he asked for? Shachach rabo ma'amar lo. Actually, the master totally forgot which animal that he asked the slave to slaughter. Shnehem yitzu levet ha-srefa. Both of the animals now have to be burnt. Neither of them are valid psachim. It's impossible to eat either of them because the master had no clear intention as to which animal should be the Pesach. But, well, or and, Fturin milasot Pesach Rishon. They are patur from doing the second Pesach. They basically were valid people to do sacrifices. They had a valid situation. They were valid at the time. It just turned out that they sacrificed too many Pesachs, and therefore they sort of passed the window of Pesach Sheni being helpful for them. Because Pesach Sheni, as we saw last in the previous chapter, was about when some of the community was impure, not when a bunch of sacrifices were invalid. What if he wanted both Pesachim? The whole point is he can't have both. You can only be registered for one Pesach. That's the principle here. So all of these are sort of cases where you might have ended up sort of accidentally being registered or almost registered for two Pesachim. You can only be registered for one. Okay, so that's the saga of forgetting which animal you chose. Now we're going to go on to a new situation, which is sort of like a family who's heading to Jerusalem to have their Pesach. And I enjoy this image here that we'll start with. Ha'omer levanav, one who said to his children, Hareini shochet et ha-Pesach al mi she'ya'aleh mikem rishon l'Yerushalayim. Let me tell you, whoever gets to Jerusalem first, whichever one of you gets to Jerusalem first, that one I will sacrifice the Pesach on their behalf. Like the Pesach will be primarily theirs, and everyone else will get their shares, but their shares come through whichever is the child who arrived at Yerushalayim first. So I just appreciate this image of like the family sort of rushing to Jerusalem and the father sort of creates a game for his children to play. You know, they're really excited about getting to eat the Pesach. It seems like a you know, afikoman precursor. It's like, you know, ways to get the children excited about eating the Pesach. So if the father made that kind of declaration, kivan she'echnis harishon rosho v'rubo zacha b'chelko umzakeh et echav imo. Then as soon as the first one arrives, and what arrives mean is the son's head and the majority of his body, when that happens, as soon as that happens, then that son sort of merits the portion, and through him allows the other sons to have their portions. So basically the father's declaration is indeed valid. When he says this, whoever gets to Jerusalem first, that's what happens. Whoever gets to Jerusalem first is the one, the primary owner of the Pesach, and the other brothers can sort of eat through him. Howard said, but isn't the sacrifice of the master also that of the sacrifice of the slaves? Why is the slave got a separate sacrifice? You're talking about the Tle Sheli and the Gedi Sheli situation. The Sheli might not be it's my Pesach. It just might mean like, I just slaughtered it for me, for my general use, not designated it for my Pesach specifically, if that answers your question there. Okay, carrying on in Mishnah Gimel. Le'olam nimnin alav ad she'yehei bo kazai l'chol echad ve'echad. So we've actually talked about this rule before. This is another example where like the Mishnah assumes you know the rest of the Mishnah, and therefore this rule was assumed several times, but never given explicitly, but here it is. You can only register for the Pesach as long as there is a olive's worth of meat for every person to eat in the group. And we talked about in a previous Mishnah about how you sort of measure that, which parts of the animal you measure to make sure that there's a kazayit for every person. And another rule about the Chavurah. So now we're just sort of getting to general rules about the Chavurah. This is also a kind of like pretty common Mishnaic tactic where it sort of starts off with a much more complicated cases of people who are owned by two people, who have two potential Pesachim they could have, and then sort of eventually gets to actually just like what are the normal rules that you need to know. And that's what happened here. We went through a whole bunch of complicated cases. Now we're actually the simple base case, which is everyone needs a Kazayit. Nimnin Umoshkin et yideihem mimenu ad sheyishchot. Not only that, but here's another rule about the chavurah, about the registration process. You can actually register and then moshkin et yideihem, pull back your hands mimenu from it. In other words, change your minds. You can like withdraw your registration for the offering ad sheyishchot, until the moment that the Pesach is slaughtered. So you could I don't want to be in this group. I want to be in that group. You can sort of rearrange your registration. You can continue to do that. Right until the moment, according to the anonymous Mishnah here, right until the moment that your Pesach is slaughtered. But Rabbi Shimon Omer, Ad Sheyizrok Alav Et Adam. Actually, Rabbi Shimon allows you to do it even after it was slaughtered, but before the blood was sprinkled on the altar. The blood sprinkling is sort of like the sealing of the sacrifice. That's the sign that it's been complete. So yeah. So they just disagree as to when sort of the sacrifice is complete enough for you to be able to, for your registration to be locked in, or can you still change your registration? You still have to pay for both. I am not sure if you have to pay for both. Because in general, what you're doing is like somebody brought a Pesach and like that person brought in a bunch of other people to eat them with them and sort of came in, shared it. So it's possible that if one person leaves the group, then it just sort of gets redistributed among the rest of the group or some other situation that they had negotiated. So I'm not sure if you'd actually end up paying for both. This whole chavurah system seems to be fairly informal in the sense that this is like the owner of the sheep or the lamb sort of or the goat. I mean, they sort of deal with it with their friends and whoever they have in the chavurah. They sort of like work out some kind of arrangement that makes sense. It doesn't seem to be such a formal arrangement otherwise. Okay. Now we have another case of things you can do in the chavurah. In this case, hamaneh imo acherim b'chelko. This is a case where somebody caused others, registered others with him, with his portion. In other words, say you have five people registered for this lamb. They each have a fifth of the lamb available to them. Then one of them who owns one fifth of this lamb decides to invite a whole bunch of other people, like five other people, on his portion of the lamb. So that fifth of the lamb will be split into five or six or whatever, however many people I said, in order to cover the group of people that he invited as well. It seems like the other members of the chavurah did not authorize this. Otherwise, it would be just one chavurah. It wouldn't be sort of two chavurot here. What we have essentially done is he sort of created his own mini chavurah out of his portion in the chavurah. It's a sort of inception moment. So the chavurah created out of the chavurah, and that is indeed what the what the rest of the group are allowed to do. Rasha'in b'nei chavurah li'tein lo et shelo, v'hu ochel mishelo v'hein ochlin mishelahen. The other group can actually say, you know what, you and your guests, I don't want you to be part of our group. Instead, you just take your portion, right? They're allowed to say, to give him his portion, his fifth, and then he can eat in his group with the people he invited, and we, the rest of us, will eat in our group with the people we originally agreed with. So this also sort of gives you a sense of, I think, the informality as well. Like the sense of like this guy going out, be like, oh, you can all eat my Pesach, come in. And then the other people, what are you talking about? We went in as a group of five. Why are you doing this? Okay, you take your chavurah, I take my chavurah. We'll have two separate groups. That'll be fine. I thought there was a minimum amount of Pesach to consume. Yes, for sure. This only works if there is a kazayit for each of the people in the mini chavurah within the fifth of the lamb that I laid out before. Each person in that mini chavurah has to have a kazayit as well, for sure. So there will come a point where this is no longer possible. To Mishnah Hey, this now requires a whole bunch of backgrounds from the land of Tuma and Tara, of the Zav and Zava, which is very appropriate as this week's Parsha. I'll sort of explain that seminal discharge stuff as we go. So the Zav shara'a shtei riyot, shochatin alav bashvi'i. So this is a Zav, somebody who experienced an abnormal, a man who experienced an abnormal seminal discharge. He saw two sightings of such a discharge, either twice on the same day or two consecutive days. In that case, they have to wait 7 days, and then they are pure in the evening. In other words, if you were a Zav, you were therefore impure and unable to eat the Pesach. But if Pesach fell on your seventh day and you only saw two instances of your discharge, such that the seventh day in the evening you would be clean automatically, then you can actually have the Pesach sacrificed upon them if the 14th falls on your seventh day. In other words, by the time you can eat the Pesach, you will be pure. Even though you are impure when the Pesach is sacrificed, by the time you can eat it, you'll be pure, and therefore they can sacrifice the Pesach on your behalf. That's the case of a situation of somebody who sees two abnormal discharges. But a man who sees three abnormal discharges, the law is that you have to wait 7 days, and then on the eighth day you bring a sacrifice, and it's only after the sacrifice of the eighth day that you become pure. There's an additional step, which amounts to an additional day. So therefore, if the 14th of Nisan was on your seventh day, you would not be able to eat the Pesach in the evening because you still need to wait another day in order to bring your offering. So Ra'ah Shalosh, if you saw three sightings and therefore like a fully fledged Zav, then Shochatin Alav Bashemini Shalo. They can slaughter the Pesach on the eighth, on his eighth day, because after he's brought the sacrifice and then that evening he'll be pure. So again, even though he's impure when the Pesach is sacrificed, when he can eat it, he'll be pure, so you can still sacrifice it on his behalf. So that's the situation with men. Now we're going to deal with the situation of women, which is slightly different. Shomeret Yom Keneged Yom, Shochatina Leha Basheni Shela. A Shomeret Yom Keneged Yom, one who's guarding day to day, is somebody who sees a abnormal discharge of blood, not during her menstrual period. If you just see one on one day, then you can sort of you wait 1 day after that, and at the end of that additional day, the second day in this case, the Sheni, you'll be pure. So that's why you can eat the Pesach if the 14th of Nisan was your second day, because that evening you'll be pure. So you can slaughter the Pesach on behalf of that woman, even though she was impure at the time, because by the time she can eat it, she'll be pure. But Ra'ata Shnei Yamim Shochatin Aleha Bashlishi, a woman who sees abnormal discharges for two consecutive days, then you have to wait 3 days. You have to wait 3 days, or is it on the third day? You can just, wait until the third day. Then, so it's just an additional day. So you see it on the first day, then you wait a day, nothing happens on the next day, you could eat the Pesach that evening. Or you see it 1 day, you see it the next day, then you wait one full day. At the end of that evening, you could eat the Pesach. V'hazava, this is somebody who has seen a considerable amount of discharge, of abnormal discharge, and has become a fully fledged zava, someone who is by the Torah impure by the genital discharge. Shochatin aleha bashmini. That person, similarly to the zav, has to wait 7 days, and then on the eighth day, bring a sacrifice. So exactly the same as the Zav above, who saw three instances of discharge, this woman also can bring the sacrifice on the eighth day and then eat the Pesach that evening. See you all tomorrow.